I promise you that any head coach really values the person who's willing to do any job.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Amanda Butler, former high major head coach and current assistant at the University of Louisville. Coach Butler is a former standout player at Florida and has built an accomplished coaching career with stops at Florida, Austin Peay, Charlotte, and Louisville, along with head coaching tenures at Charlotte, Florida, and Clemson. She's led major program turnarounds, including taking over a last place team and guiding it to a 20-win season and NCAA tournament appearance. In this episode, we discuss how she rebuilt a struggling program into a winner, how she learned to coach and develop her assistants during her time as a head coach, and how those experiences now allow her to add value in new ways as an assistant. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Amanda Butler. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Ladies and gentlemen, and all you coaches out there, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Alongside us today is the assistant women's coach at the University of Louisville. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Amanda Butler. Coach Butler, welcome.
Hey guys, great to be here. Thanks for having me on. I really admire the work you do and honored to get an invite to come and share some thoughts. This is great.
Yeah, thank you. This is a second lady cardinal we've had on. We had Coach Pineda on way back when we first got started with this deal.
Listen, that's tough. That's a tough act to follow. She's outstanding and proud to be her coworker. So y'all are smart for snagging her early.
Yes, and smart for snagging you now. So, yeah.
No doubt. No, and I remember she had a whole story. I forget the minor details, but like her whole car situation, and she had to get to an interview, and that's how her career started. She had a unique way. So like her story in the background was, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's working at Best Buy.
Yeah, she's a worker. She's a hustler. Any story that leads to where she is now is believable just because she gets after it and does whatever it takes in a really positive way. So really blessed to work alongside her.
Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah.
There's no question that there's great things going on at Louisville. For those, I know when we are recording this now, it is towards the middle end of February and absolutely rolling, right? 24-4. Hopefully when people hear this, there's going to be some bigger and better things going on. But right now, we're grateful to be able to get you for a little bit of time. And one thing that we want to make sure to touch on is, I guess, a variety of things. Let me rephrase that, a variety of things. You have some great assistant experiences. I know you had a great playing career in Florida. So obviously that started things because you saw things firsthand as a player, but then transitioned into various places as a head coach. And we'll get into all of this later on, but you have changed programs around as a head coach. And it is just amazing what you have done. But before we get into that, I'd like to touch on the fact that you have coached in multiple conferences. So that's one thing that I think is really unique, being the A-10, the SEC, the ACC. You've seen different styles. You've seen different tendencies, different tactics. You've seen a lot of great things out of those, I'm sure. Out of all of those conferences, out of all the different styles, are there any lessons about the culture side of things, the competition, really just anything that you took away from your times in different conferences?
I also was an assistant in the OVC for a period as well at the beginning of my career, and I loved that experience too. And I think each conference was a little different. Each challenge that each conference presented, the collection of coaches, the collection of players at the time made the experiences just completely across the board. And I think it's fun as you go into a different league or even a new era in the same league, because we're going through different eras and transitional periods in our sport right now. It's fun to learn and try to evolve. And it was really fun for me. I actually started my coaching career as what we used to call a third assistant at the University of Florida. That was back in the day before there were DOBOs and video coordinators. And that was the third assistant. And you basically did everything except recruit. And so to go from that And then the challenges of the OVC, the challenges that, again, just being a little bit spoiled, being there at Florida for a while, where you bus everywhere and you're trying to figure out travel in a way that still promotes winning when it doesn't involve flights. So there's things like that. I got to learn from my head coach there. Her name was Susie Gardner. She was tremendous, won a ton of games there at Austin Peay. But the transition from A-10, I was Conference USA assistant, and then that's when the world started changing. And then we were suddenly in the A-10, which was a great basketball league. Really unique because we didn't, and I don't mean this to sound any kind of way, we didn't really compete with football because all of our schools were very basketball-centered. And then to get the opportunity to be the head coach at my alma mater at the University of Florida and to go from that into a league that's really very football-centered was a unique challenge, especially as a manager and a CEO of a program. It's hard to condense the lessons. Suffice to say, I made a lot of mistakes. I learned a lot. And if you want the entire list of everything I learned, I think the listeners are just going to have to tune into part two of this series because it's just way, way too broad. But it was fun. And I think one of the things that's important, and this is maybe the most important thing to note, is to always be learning and to always be evolving. And as you change jobs or change leagues or change chairs, really being open to learning, embracing the challenges, and not having a mindset of scarcity, but a mindset of advantage and what are we promoting as opposed to, oh, wow, this is going to be so hard because we don't have A, B, and C. I think that's a mindset that's probably served me well, and especially my last two head coaching stops.
You wouldn't be sitting here if you're not a competitor. And I think I already know this answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Was it, and this is because I always felt this way when you have a chance to coach in different leagues, was one of the things that kind of stokes your fire, like when you get to a place and then one of the first things you think about is you look at the landscape of the league and how it's laid out and who's been the champion and that kind of thing. All right, who do we chase down next? Here's where our program is and here's like how teams have been doing. And you had this idea of like, all right, who do we have to beat to get where we want to go? And sometimes that's, if you've been pretty good, middle of the pack, you're trying to get to the top three. Sometimes if you've been at the bottom, now you get trying to get to the middle of the pack or whatever that looks like. Every dynamic's different. But was that one of the things that kind of fired you up when you go different places?
Definitely, 100%. Yeah. And I think that challenge, so when I took over at Florida and then when I took over at Clemson, the one thing that was the same was both of those teams had finished last in the league the previous year, which is why there was a new head coach, insert me. I think when I went into it as a young head coach at Florida, you're a little less seasoned and the level of ambition and competitiveness doesn't change, but how you approach it and the strategy, hopefully you're infusing a little bit more wisdom in the second round. My first go around at that, and we were successful at it, but it was just like, we're going to get in there, we're going to beat everybody, we're going to work hard, just ride. It was like cheerleading and hype all the time, and that's how we recruited, and that's how we approached, you know, trying to make waves in that league, which is obviously a very good league and was an outstanding league at that time as well. I think then being a little bit more measured going into that second opportunity at Clemson, which was a complete rebuild, it was a little bit more of a wiser understanding of, to your point, Alan, like, who are the beatables? What are the winnable games to win the league? Or we weren't trying to beat who was on top.
Yeah.
But I think the goal when you're in those situations, besides developing culture and trying to set some deep roots, is you're trying to find your way into the NCAA tournament. And then that changes things. And so I think I had a little bit more wise approach as I went into the Clemson challenge, which was very different than the Florida challenge. And trying to understand what was more immediately accessible to us, no matter how fired up we were, and probably imposed a little bit more measured strategy that matched that situation.
Yeah,
both were fun. And the thing that also holds true is that I had the privilege of doing it with amazing people. The staffs that chose to work with me and then the players that I inherited and then also chose to come alongside in that journey.
Yeah.
Good stuff all the way around.
you can tell this is not the first time she's done something like this, because her words and her phrases are spot on. She said, the people who chose to work with me, she said, the mistakes I made, I learned from. And it's just, but the thing is, they're all true too. And I do want to make sure, I know a lot of times we get people on here and people don't necessarily want to brag for themselves. So I'll make sure to say for everybody, you stepped in and you're talking about your time in Clemson. You stepped in, they were previously, I believe, last place. And you changed that program around to a 20-win season, an NCAA tournament berth, ACC Coach of the Year, and the largest improvement by a first-year head coach. Okay, so I'll do the bragging for you and saying it's absolutely instrumental. And it's a huge piece that you have went into multiple programs and have changed them and helped them succeed and grow. So with that being said, these times you're talking about your stints, you're talking about having to make these mistakes that you learn from. So for those people out there who maybe are first-year head coaches who are stepping into that first opportunity or see that first opportunity coming up in the near future, what were those mistakes that you look back on and you're like, ah, yeah, I learned from these as a first year. I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, gosh, it's hard to think of the first-year mistakes and separate them from the second-year mistakes or the third-year mistakes, because in your brain, they just live as your mistakes. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is very insightful, but it holds up and it's true. Who you surround yourself, your staff, that is just such a huge, it's a huge component. Nothing great's ever accomplished alone. We know that. But I think the journey that you're on, that's really hard to understand when you are beginning your head coaching career, is one of the things you have to make your superpower is knowing yourself. And the more that you can dig into self-awareness and be really honest with yourself and understand yourself at a higher level and hopefully a progressive increasingly level, it gives you the best chance to also select staff or recruit staff that can help you with your blind spots, cover you on your weaknesses, multiply the things that you're great at. And those were just some of the mistakes and some of the things I nailed along the way as they related to staff. I think another first year, hard part of it, and I think this is a little bit of wisdom and a little bit of experience, is you really learn how to prioritize better, because in your first year, you just want to do it all. You want to do the individual workouts. You want to be front and center of every scout, every recruit, every booster function, every radio show. And then when you hit about year five, you've got a much better handle on, I not that I don't have time for that or it's not important, but it's not important as this, whatever this may be. So learning to prioritize is a really hard thing to do on the job. And I think that's one of the reasons why, aside from your staff, I said surround yourself with great people. When you let people who have more wisdom and experience than you speak into you as you are that first year head coach, it helps you with some of that prioritizing and decision-making, where you feel like you've got to be the driver in all those scenarios, and just literally everything can't have your time. And so that would be one of the things I would really encourage younger head coaches or folks that are prepping for that, is whoever it is that you admire that you have access to. And now, again, just like with things like this, we have access to so many people that we don't know. We wouldn't necessarily call them mentors, but what are you learning, first and foremost, about yourself? And then how are you accruing wisdom in a way that's going to help you make hard decisions and release the reins a little bit on every decision so that you make the main decisions in the proper fashion?
Yeah. No, it's so true. Golly. It's funny. The better people that you bring around you, the better you delegate. And I think I'm sure that's one thing that you learned from between year one to three and three to five. Is you become a better coach when you delegate better, because you allow those people to, it's like your players, right? There's certain parts of your offense that certain players are better at, and this player's spots are here, and your offense operates when everybody kind of lets each other rock in their certain areas. And when you, I know for me, it was really helpful that I obviously had an unbelievable staff, but when you get out of their way a little bit, you tell them what you need and what you expect, but then you hand them the paintbrush. And then once, because they're good at what they do, you wouldn't have brought them there. And then as you, and what's fun is watching them grow. And now they develop their own coaching voices as you move along in years one, two, three, four, and you see their confidence puff out a little bit because of that delegation. And they allow you sometimes to be an assistant for 15 minutes in practice because you're talking all the time. But then when you give them that shell segment for 15 minutes, then you get to roam around and actually coach more kids than you do when you're actually front and center.
I'm learning that lesson very differently now, working for Jeff Walls, who's a future Hall of Famer, has done basically nothing but win here at Louisville, how he operates in practice. And in a way where he doesn't always have to be front and center. He chooses his moments when he wants to be front and center. But I think it allows him to observe and notice things that he wouldn't necessarily notice if he was trying to run every drill, be the main voice in every segment on down the line. He's an absolute master at, I'll just say, working the room and talking of that's the practice room. He may pull a player aside middle of practice and talk to her for 10 minutes, but he noticed something that in his voice and his way needed to be addressed that maybe one of us assistants couldn't do. And he's fantastic at delegating and staying in his strengths as a, I'm enjoying learning the way Jeff does that.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
So does on that, like as a head coach, I should say when you were a head coach, but then also Coach Wallace, like how do you teach the assistants? Obviously giving them a voice, being able to implement them as you, we just, or I should say, you guys just hit it on the head by letting them get voices in drills and different things. But how do you correct, as a head coach, correct your assistants and basically teach them, especially the younger assistants? Like, how do you teach them, hey, you're doing it this way. Maybe think about it this way. Cause I know there are certain ways, if you say it a wrong way, maybe they could take it a wrong way. And you obviously want to correct them and you want to tell them like, hey, do it this way. What's the best ways that you have learned to do that, to coach your assistants?
There's two things that I think come to mind immediately. The first is just on the front end when you're recruiting someone to your staff, or even if they're recruiting you and you're trying to figure out that you guys are a match for one another. I think clarity and creating and communicating in a way that's really well understood, like this is the vision. This is my vision as the leader. I'm going to build as much clarity around that vision as I can because I need you to be now become the vision carrier. So I think clarity is a huge part of that on the front end. And then the other part of it is the same way that we interact with our team. There has to be some connection and some relationship and some conversation when you on the front end where you build some connection when where there is a rougher moment or if there's a more intense moment in practice. Where again, just like with a player, you got 3 seconds to make a change, deliver a message, and you don't get to do that while you're rubbing their back where they can hear it in a way that you know that it's in, the intention is like it's feedback. And it may not sound like positive feedback, but so I tried to have those positive relationships with feedbacks with my players, but then also with your staff because you're a team as well. And Alan, just like you pointed out, like sometimes, yeah, you're listening to them and you're at that moment and that's great. But inevitably, there's going to be some form of conflict or disagreement, whatever pretty words you want to use to make it not sound harsh, that's going to occur. And if you've done a good job as a boss of promoting clarity around the main things, and then you have a level of connection and communication pathways that you formed with your staff, I think you navigate those moments a little less tumultuously. And then, hey, sometimes you blow it as the head coach. Just like you said, Doug, you might say something the wrong way that hits them a lot in a lot more sensitive spot than you intended. And if you want to be a great communicator, if you want to be a solid leader, then you got to follow up. And maybe you got to apologize. Or maybe you got to, again, eject another measure of clarity or hear what you have to say because you have no idea how you made them feel. But now you're realizing you made them feel something you did not intend. So I think all those things are wrapped in there. But I think also when you are aligned in purpose, this is what we're trying to do and this is how we're trying to do it. And these are some of the challenges that we will face. You to me or me to a player or you to a player, it makes all of it a little bit easier because you can always go back to we're aligned in this mission though. This is really about us getting her graduated or getting that win or nailing practice today, or as we were talking about off air, having a fantastic bye week. As long as there's alignment of what and clarity around what the mission is, no matter how big or small that is, I think you have a better way of kind of understanding each other, giving each other a little grace, which is also necessary because we're all going to blow it. The head coach is going to blow it. Assistants are going to blow it. It's easy for us to point out when the players blow it, but grace is definitely part of this successful equation as well.
Yeah, for sure. And clarity in relationships are boyfriend and girlfriend in a way, because if clarity in relationships are always holding hands, then typically the messaging flows easier because there's a foundation of the relationship first, and then the relationship allows for the clarity, and then the clarity and the relationship allow to carry the bucket and deliver the message. And I think the message always is easier received and better received when the clarity is there, like you said. And then if there's, that's why the relationship piece is so important, because it doesn't, that keeps it from that personal feeling or the hands defending themselves, like, you know, hey, like, you don't, when the relationship's there, you don't see as much of that. And you don't have the BCD as much, as they say, blame, complain, defend yourself stuff going on. Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, because young coaches, that's probably the single biggest thing. If they had to say, all right, if I'm a young coach, what thing could I master that's going to best help me in this profession? It would be that. It would be the ability to communicate and have a feel for people's buttons, develop a feel for everybody's button in the room. And every room you're in is going to have different people with different buttons, but, and that takes time. That's an acquired skill, but that ability travels so well in this profession, regardless of what position you have, on the floor, off the floor, dobo, whatever. Yeah. I'm so glad you mentioned that about just the clarity piece and the shared vision. That's huge.
No, I want to make sure to say there was something I saw recently, and what it went into was, it was a 7-55-38 rule. And this is actually going into what you guys were saying. I just saw this the other day, a 7-55-38. And it was 7% of communication. It was a rule of all about a communication. 7% of it is the words that you express, what comes out of your mouth. 55% of it was the body language that you pursue, or the way that you say it to somebody. And then the other 38 is just like the tone in which you say it. Ultimately stating, like, the tone and the body language are the biggest pieces, because if you were to say something and say it with a bad body language, or you're looking around or whatever, they might take it a different way. So like the tone and the body language are the two biggest things. And then what you say is always following that. That was something I saw. I thought that was great to hear, and it fits this perfectly.
Yeah, I think it's just a good reminder. Because I do think, and I'm sure I've done this as a head coach, and many head coaches probably feel this way, in the heat of the moment, you don't get a pass for how you act or how you talk to people, even though it is the heat of the moment. Mm-hmm. And now I'm saying that as a person who played basketball in the 90s, and anything at all could have been said or done to us, and we were going to shake our heads and say, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, where we're at now. And I think the heat of the moment is going to occur, but there's still accountability in the heat of the moment. It's sometimes where some of our best work is done. And for some people, it's maybe where the worst of them comes out. But there's two thoughts that I thought of when you were talking about mastery of clarity and mission, excuse me, Alan, and some of that. I go back to the mastery of self has got to be front and center in your journey. And something that ends, it's something that whether you think you are about to be a head coach or you've been a head coach for 10 years, that you still should be pursuing, in my opinion. And then the other thing, Doug, it sounded a little bit like math to me when you started getting up numbers. So I started writing them down so I wouldn't forget them. Thankfully, I followed really well. But I spent a little time. I was very blessed to spend some time with Mark Dagnall. He was an assistant for Billy at Donovan at Florida, and then he went on to be the G League coach at OKC and Clemson stints. He let me come and just basically sit there every day and absorb, take notes, ask questions of what they were doing with the OKC Blue, which was a phenomenal learning experience for me. But Mark started out their camp talking about the rule, and I don't know, I'm going to mess the ratios up, but basically it was like 90-10 or 80-20, and then basically like, everybody in your life, your wife, your best friend, let alone your coworkers and your players, probably about 80 or 90% of the time, somewhere in there, are pretty good people that you enjoy being around and that you're happy to go to battle with or go to dinner with or whatever the right. But there's going to be about 10% of the time where they need grace. And if we hold people accountable for being their best 100% of the time, then we're setting ourselves up for disappointment. And it doesn't mean that we don't let people off the hook or have standards or things like that. But I just think there's a reality of being human that we've got to understand we're on both sides of. 10% of the time, we may be the jerks. But 10% right. of the time, that other person's maybe having the bad day or the struggle or whatever the case may be. And I think that rule of 90-10 makes a lot of sense to me. I probably need more than 10% of the time grace. Maybe you guys are nailing it. I don't know.
No, but I
think it's a great way to approach group dynamic. And if you can get everyone to acknowledge, hey, we're probably going to be pretty dadgum good with our effort, with our attitudes, 85, 90% of the time. But now, what do we do with that other 10 or 15% of the time? Again, circling back to relationship, mm-hmm. are you going to allow me to coach you, whether you be an assistant coach or whether you be your starting point guard? And then the other being true. So the 10% of the time when I'm being not my best self, will I allow someone to speak into those moments for me and hear them and receive them? Like you said, Alan, not with defensiveness, but just the real. I'm probably getting a lot of stuff right, but yeah, there's going to be some sections of the day or the week or the season where I'm not. And now what? And I think those are just really healthy conversations to have and acknowledgments to make on the front end of a journey.
Yeah, 100%. No, I call that traffic jam grace, right? Because people always get pissed in the traffic jam. Oh, I can't believe us traffic. So you're part of the traffic too.
Right.
So this is, give these other 75 cars some grace because you're part of the traffic too. They're saying the exact same thing about
that's
you
right.
right now.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's traffic jam grace, right? It's not everybody else's fault for being out here. You're out here too. Just do what you got to do. Use your blinkers, get where you need to go and don't have any road rage. It's not, there's bigger, worse things in life going on.
Definitely.
But such a good reminder that you said that, especially the self-awareness thing for young coaches. That's going to, as this pod pops out in a month or so, that's really going to hit some people square because as young coaches, you always want to find out who you can admire and who you can emulate. And I love that coach for that reason. I want to be like that coach and that's great, but no one will ever be the best version of you. And you can recipe yourself with other coaches and sprinkle some Mark Dagnold here, some Brad Stevens there, some Jeff Waltz here, some Brad Brownell there. You can make your own recipe, but that when that thing comes out of the oven, it's got to be. And that's a big one for young coaches. So I'm really glad you touched on that self-awareness thing earlier.
The self-awareness, self-awareness and then the self-improvement. That's the one thing that I've learned from doing these and talking with people who have been head coaches is people always say you better be self-aware and self-improve yourself. So ultimately saying, if you want to be a head coach, you have to be able to look in the mirror and change yourself before you can lead and change somebody else. And that's one of those things that I feel like when sometimes you'll see coaches or just people in general in the world, like bosses and corporate leaders and all that stuff. And they're pointing the finger saying, this person's not doing it right. This person's not doing it right. But a lot of times it's probably, if they've been there for some time, it could be trickling down, right? From that person up top who's maybe leading them the wrong way or maybe doing something wrong. Not always, but there are occasions, situations. So that's to me was one of the biggest things was just the self-improvement, self-awareness, and know yourself before you lead others. That is huge. But I do want to ask, okay, so this is one question we always love to ask people, especially in a situation that you have done. You've gone from a head coach, multiple positions as a head coach, right? Florida, as you mentioned, UNC Charlotte, Clemson as well. From those years as a head coach, and then you step into an assistant. I know sometimes that could be difficult for people, but for you, obviously, it's been, from what we see from the outside looking in, it's been very successful. You guys are absolutely, like we said, on a tear right now. But how was that transition going from a head coach to an assistant? And really, what do you understand and how do you feel in that assistant role now after being a head coach?
That's a deep and wide question, Doug. I think professionally, first and foremost, I identify as a coach. Not necessarily a coach of women or a coach of men or a college coach or a pro coach, or I am a coach. And am I the head coach? Am I the assistant coach? I'm still coaching. And that's how I identify professionally. That is what I love doing. and frankly, all I've ever done. And so from that standpoint, it's an easy transition. The more difficult part of the transition is trying to learn Jeff very quickly from the inside. Obviously, we had a relationship, a competitive relationship and a friendship on as head coaches in the same league, but really no idea of him on the inside of his program. I think being a head coach and then becoming an assistant coach, I really understood the value of trying as quickly as I could to understand what he needed. And then if what he needed in his assistance, if I could help deliver that in some way. So I'm a learner. I really enjoy learning. So that part of it was very exciting to me of just like, I'm about to see a whole new way of doing things that's probably going to be very different than the way that I did things. That was freaking exciting for me and still is every day. He still will surprise me with something where I'm like, what? And it's a good surprise because I really enjoy learning. But I hope that I'm serving him well in being able to relate to some of the things that he struggles with or he's confronted with or he's trying to balance because I've sat in his seat before. I hope that I add value that way. But again, that's just personally for me, the other thing that I'm always trying to do is find ways to add value. Whether those are obvious, it's obvious, like if, you know, Jeff's, hey, this is going on and just wants to talk about it because he knows I can relate. That's an obvious thing. But can I add value in the way that we're coaching our players up with film? Can I add value maybe in the space of analytics? Because now I'm not the head coach and I can spend a lot more time learning analytics in a way that it was a deeper dive than maybe when I was a head coach. But I think it's just really important to me that I feel like I am adding value to him and serving him well. And as our title suggests, we're supposed to assist. So it's not about me. It's not about what I have done or what I can do or even what I think. Am I assisting him? Because he is the head coach. And obviously, he's won a lot of games, a ton, been to 4 Final Fours before I ever even thought there was a possibility I may be in Louisville. I'm trying to learn very selfishly. And then the other part of it, just really trying to add value. I can see where head coaches would struggle with becoming assistant coaches if, again, there's an identification of I'm a head coach. That's what I do. And it's something I know I can do. But as I said, my primary way I see myself is like, I'm a basketball coach. Whether it's head coach in Florida, assistant coach in Clarksville, Tennessee, or a head coach in the ACC, or an assistant coach in the ACC. If I'm coaching, then I'm doing what I think I'm called to do. And hopefully I'm trying to continue to find ways to make myself better so that I can serve my boss and the young women who are here and have chosen this program.
If there's one magic word that probably pops up on this pod all the time, or magic two words, it's those words you mentioned, add value. Like every person that is bat flipped and knocked their pod guest appearance out of the park has used that word in that phrase, add value. And that's, again, that's another magic word, cheat code for young coaches, right? Don't worry about being in the SEC. If you're a 24-year-old grad assistant somewhere at a Division III, don't worry about being in the SEC in 2 weeks. Don't worry about focus on skipping steps. Just be the best where you are. And what can you do to add value on a daily basis where you're at? It could be with the players, assistant. Maybe you got part of your deal. You do stuff on campus. I'm so glad, again, I said that about things you said 9 times today. So glad you said that, because that's what young coaches need to hear. It's not about advancement. It's about adding value. And adding value eventually does bring advancement, but it brings the right kind. Mm-hmm. Right, because you don't want to worry about being an associate head coach or an assistant coach here if you're a GA, or a head coach if you're an assistant. Just focus on being a great coach. And if you focus on being a great coach, then you'll be ready for the position when it comes, because the position isn't really the deal. It's what you're bringing into that is more important.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I want to say the word value. I had a young assistant ask me this recently, and they said, I have to find a way to add value to a program. and I said it before on a couple other podcasts that we've had, but I think this was advice. I'm not even going to sit here and claim it myself. This was advice we had from somebody on here, from numerous people, and I compiled them together. It was, and like what I said was, always just listen. Just listen, because the coach, the head coach, and everybody around you will give you so many problems. Oh, man, we are struggling right now, offensive rebounding. We are struggling doing this. We can't break a 2-2-1 prep, whatever. Okay, then go find a couple drills, come back to them that your head coach put in front of them, whether they listen to it or not. You just gave them some advice, right? You gave them some ways to break those problems, or I need a whiteboard, whatever it might be. There's always problems presented. Just got to find ways to solve them. So
I think one other thought on that, Doug, is also very often, I think, especially as young assistants, you don't want to, like, where value maybe is needed to be added might not be the sexiest job on the staff. Everybody wants to coach. Yes. Everybody wants to be on the floor. Everybody wants to be perched on the head coach's shoulder during practice with the whiteboard. Everybody wants to recruit the top tier kids. But there's also really important value in, okay, what if we don't get our plan A kids? I'll be the one who's got the plan B players, the backups, whatever your terminology is. I'll be a lead at that, you know, of coaching. We don't get the top 10 player, but here's a great top 50 player. I'm going to talk to her two or three times. Like, I don't think that people enjoy always adding value in the spaces that head coaches very much value.
So
like, I'll be the coach that is going to really stay on top of academics. Like, what assistant coach wants to do that? Not many, because we don't, that's not a coaching duty. It is if keeping your players eligible and moving them in on pace to graduation is part of your job, which it is. So I think there's a lot of ways to add value. And I think that's just another self-awareness piece, especially as a younger person in the profession, is I'm not going to necessarily always get to add value where I want to. But I think, Doug, what you said was fantastic. Notice what your head coach is saying a lot that he or she values, and then find drills or spaces in the day or meetings with the team, individual in the team, that solves that problem for the head coach, where then they're not saying it all the time anymore. And that may seem really obvious, but I think that's something, as a person who's had the opportunity to lead other people, certain jobs everybody wants to do, but the other jobs still have to get done. And I promise you that any head coach really values the person who's willing to do any job. And it's a cliche. Everybody will say, oh, I'll come in and sweep the floor. And that's not a job. That took 15 seconds, and you should be willing to do that, or we hired the wrong person. I'm talking about being the person who will get up every morning, every Monday morning, and meet with the player before her Monday morning classes to make sure she's ready. Did you do your homework? Did you do this? Are you ready for the test? Did, you know, be willing to do the things that make the program as a whole successful. And then to your point, Alan, some of those things you really want to do, if you do those other things really well that you may seem as, that may seem small, some of those bigger responsibilities are going to come your way.
Yeah. Yes. No doubt. 100%.
No, add value wherever. Add value wherever you can, and also be willing to add value if it's not going to be noticed.
100%.
It all makes you a better assistant and prepares you to be a better head coach.
Yeah, no doubt. You got to take glory in the things that don't bring you personal glory.
Silent but effective.
That ultimately, like you always tell that low kid on the weak side, look for work, right? Like, you're the low man over there, a low lady on the weak side. Like,
we say low man too. It's okay. We say
low. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Low person. I didn't know. Yeah.
Low individual. No, we say low man as well.
But yeah, you might be pulling for a baseline drive. It may be a crackdown. It might be a weak side blockout. It could be pulling for a charge. It's like you may be running over and going vertical inside the circle. Look for work. It's always work to be found.
Think about the things we tell our players, right? Everybody wants to be the leading scorer, but we got to find somebody on this team who wants to pass to her, or who wants for her, or who wants to guard her every day in practice to make her better, because we need her or him to be their best. There's very few people who want those jobs, but those jobs, as we know, are really important. Yeah. They're essential. They're crucial. And so I think it's also just a really good, we keep talking about self-awareness. Think about the things you're saying to players. Are you living those? Are you modeling those in your role, in your program? Are you willing to do the dirty work every day? Not the dirty work on the one day when, oh, okay, gosh, there's no one here to sleep the floor, I'll sweep it. But no, I'll go out here and sweep it every day because the floor needs to be swept. Right. The things we're saying to players, we're trying to convince kids that came in as superstars from high school, hey, you're going to be the decoy. Who wants to be the decoy? I want you to know those are important roles. And I think you can transfer that thinking and that mentality straight line from how you are as a professional working with other people. There's going to be things that need to be done. Be the one who answers the call.
Yeah, no doubt.
Mm.
Love it.
And that right there is a heck of a way to be able to just mic drop. Be the one to answer the call. Boom.
No doubt.
Drop, walk away.
Put a big cardinal red ribbon on it right
big
there.
Big L's up. Get your L's up.
Big L's up. Well, Coach Butler, number one, we want to say, and we said in the beginning, but then again, honestly, and any coach is just taking time out of your day. I know you said you have a little bit more of a bye week and a couple days until your next game, but nonetheless, this is the busy part of the season. So we really do appreciate, one, the experiences that you have had are tremendous, and to be able to give those that information and those experiences to other people, I'm sure people are listening to this and definitely taking some great notes. But then on top of that, just grateful that we were able to sit here and chat it up with you. So thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Likewise, really appreciate you guys reaching out. I love to talk and share. I would take that one step further to anybody that is listening that wants to talk through things. I enjoy doing that. I really do. I think it makes me better when someone maybe is approaching me as someone who's been in the business for 20 or 30 years and asks a question that really makes my mind start to, my wheels start to spin. Really appreciate this opportunity to share. As I mentioned before we got started, I think it's tremendous that you guys make this effort to, in a very formal way, provide a platform for learning for those that are pursuing learning, because it's critical. And I'm really honored that you asked me to come on. And
of course,
and I got two new buds now. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this is awesome. Again, it's for Doug and I. We're the biggest hijackers out here because we learn directly, obviously, in these moments from our guests. But it's also a way for us to kind of give back to the game in our own way. There's been, you know, Doug has a shorter line than I do in terms of people that have helped him get where he is, but my line goes from here to Beijing. And so I can never repay everybody, but hopefully if this in some small way helps one person, then that's another little baby turtle back in the ocean. But yeah, thank you so much. This was awesome.
No, my pleasure, guys. Thanks so much.
And to everyone out there, thank you all, as always, for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Coaches, keep working and keep rising.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll be right back.